Welcome to WBH Radio. My name is William Holly. I am making my I-95 Sports and Entertainment Network debut. It is a pleasure to be here with you guys today. Thank you to Bobby and everybody at I-95 for allowing me the opportunity to be a part of your platform. I greatly appreciate it. Please hit me on Twitter at WBH Radio. Let me know you love it, you hate it, it sucked, it was the worst. Just hit me up, man. All comments and insight is greatly appreciated. Always looking to get better, always looking to learn something. Now that we got the pleasantries out of the way, let's get down to business. The NBA playoffs are finally here. It seems like I've been waiting for it since the first day of the season. Like, damn, can we get to the games that matter already? Came off of a weekend of full NBA action. What I love about the playoffs is that it is a whole different ball game than the regular season. In the playoffs, things kind of slow down. And I believe players are able to focus. Because during the regular season, you might be in one city one night. The next night, you're in another city. You got family issues. You got deals with your sponsor, public appearances. But In the playoffs, it's time to put the kids to bed. It's grown folk time. It's grown folks time. And that's what we saw from the Golden State Warriors, the very first game of the playoffs. Much has been made about them backpedaling into the postseason, the struggles, the injuries mounting up, possible strife between Kevin Durant and Steve Kerr. But as soon as the lights went on for the playoffs, they got down to business. And you know, Steve Kerr said, yo, play time is over. Because when Steph Curry went out, they tried different combinations at the point guard. They tried the young kid McCaw. They tried this other guy, Quinn Cook. But these games matter. These are the games they give trophies for. These are the games they give out rings for. So what did Steve Kerr do? He said, yo, give me my former All-Star. Give me my Finals MVP and Andre Iguodala. He's starting at the point guard position. Well, Steve, he's not a traditional point guard. Who cares? I'm putting the group together that I trust most. And the Golden State Warriors were able to go out there and run over the San Antonio Spurs in the first game of the series. Were able to run over them. And to me, that just highlighted how different the playoffs are. Last year, I worked in the Yankee travel department. I helped move the team all around the country, in and out of ballparks, different hotels, chartered planes, team buses. And throughout the regular season, we were running around with like chickens with our head cut off. We just got off of a road trip. We have to pay all of the bills from the previous road trip. You know, I got to handle the hotel bill from Boston. Meanwhile, I'm looking ahead to us going to Seattle next week. I got players coming in with personal matters that I need to help them with. Hey, Will, my mom's in town. Can you hook her up? But when the playoffs came, that stuff came to a standstill. It's the most important time of the year, yet it's the easiest to handle. Because we don't have a tomorrow. I don't have to make arrangements for next week because we might not be playing. So I remember when we were in the playoffs, me and my supervisor sat in his office with our feet on the desk. Yo, there's nothing to do. We play today, we win. Okay, then we got arrangements to make. But there's no looking ahead. And I think that's when we see the best version of these athletes. And that's what we saw from Golden State. They played the second game Monday night. The Spurs came back with a valiant effort. That's what you expect from a team with championship pedigree like them, even though most of the guys on that team have not participated in playoffs and championship series. But Pop is still there, so that pedigree is passed on. LaMarcus Aldridge came back with a big game, playing physical. But the Golden State Warriors were just too much. Just too much for the San Antonio Spurs, even without Steph Curry. Because they got a kid in Kevin Durant who was unguardable. He's no longer playing with Westbrook. The handcuffs are off. The handcuffs are off, and we see a seven-footer that can handle the rock, shoot the ball like nobody else. And you partner him with Klay Thompson. Yo, I never seen anybody score 30 points by only dribbling the ball six times. Only dribbling the ball six times. He doesn't need an ISO. He doesn't need a play call for him. He come off that screen, catch it, knock it down. And Klay didn't have the season statistically that he has had in the past, that we know he's capable of. Yet his mind is still always engaged, always into the game. There's so many things you could do on a basketball court. Okay, I'm not getting the ball today. I'm going to just lock up on defense. And now that Steph Curry is out, the team is relying on him more, and he is delivering. He is delivering. Great job for the Golden State Warriors. Great job for the Golden State Warriors. Wish we could say the same about what's going on in Cleveland, but it was a struggle for LeBron that first game this past weekend. It was definitely a struggle for LeBron and the Cavaliers. Now, I first got to give credit to the Indiana Pacers. I am recording right now at Brooklyn College. I am a proud Brooklyn native. So I want to send a shout out to the great Lance Stephenson, man. Coney Island's own. Lincoln High School's own. After a couple up and down years in Charlotte with the Clippers, it's good to see you playing under the bright lights of the NBA playoffs again. And not only is he playing, but he's producing. He's performing. He was in LeBron James' face all game. An irritant. Is he better than LeBron? No. But when you have a great player like LeBron, all you want to do is put somebody in front of him that's going to compete for the whole game. And that's what Lance did. In fact, the Indiana Pacers got a squad of guys like that. I never seen a team of individuals with the complete set of guys who were confident in what their duties were hell-bent on playing a role in the game, no matter if the ball came their way or not. They had a team of guys. We know what Victor Oladipo did. Behind him was Lance Stephenson, was Miles Turner, Darren Collison. No matter who they put in the game, they kept coming at the Cavs. Now, when the Cavaliers made their trades at the trade deadline, getting rid of Isaiah Thomas, getting rid of D. Wade, bringing in the likes of George Hill and Rodney Hood and Jordan Clarkson, I said, man, I'm all in on this trade. You could put the Cavs in the finals right now. I'm all in. But things didn't materialize that way. And in fact, in the last week of the regular season, when LeBron James and the Cavaliers went up against the Washington Wizards, a game in which they won, a game when LeBron James helped them erase a 17-point deficit and beat the Wizards, I said, man, they in trouble. Even in victory, I could see the deficiencies. Man, they in trouble. The offense is too reliant on LeBron James. It's too reliant. Now, I don't know who to blame for that. Because when Jordan Clarkson was in L.A., we seen him put up 16 points a game. When Rodney Hood and George Hill were in Utah, we seen them contributing. Hell, when Kevin Love was in Minnesota, we seen him going 25 and 15. So the talent is in these guys. The numbers, the capabilities are in these guys. How come we haven't seen it? And I'm going to have to point the finger at the great LeBron James. I think his gameplay, his style, is neutering the talent around him. LeBron, you are one of the strongest guys in the game. They got a smaller guy on you in Lance Stephenson. There's no reason you should be pounding the ball at the top of the key, dribbling, dribbling, dribbling. Take his ass in the post. Every time you went to the post this weekend, you got a basket. You got a basket, LeBron. But for whatever reason, you refuse to go down there continuously. Maybe you're not comfortable. But the pounding the rock at the top of the key, running the pick and roll, is not the way. It's not the way. Allow these guys to make a play on their own. Let Jordan Clarkson bring the ball up. Let him be your Kyrie Irving. Go on a little stretch of a 6-0 run or 8-0 run to alleviate some of the duties you have, LeBron. For the story of LeBron James' career, the story has been, yo, he doesn't have enough around him. He was in Miami with the big three, and they were saying, yo, he doesn't have enough around him. LeBron, I think it's time to look in the mirror, brother. I think you are playing a role in these guys not producing around you. Let the ball just swing it, pass it, pass it. Let it move around. You don't need to have it in your hand the whole time. Your numbers will come. Just being a smart basketball player, opportunities will come for you. In 2018, team ball is winning above all else. It's no longer the story of the star. The Golden State Warriors have shown us that. The Spurs have been doing it. LeBron, you got to be better on the offensive end. You can't walk away from the game and say, I had a triple-double. I did my job. No, brother. There's talent around you. You're not utilizing it. And the Indiana Pacers are coming for your head. That is a team that beat you 3 out of 4 times this year. So many believe that was an upset this past weekend. But I don't. Okay, you guys are the 4th seed and they're the 5th. Okay, you guys got LeBron James. But they handled you the whole year. There's no reason they can't continue to handle you guys in this series. There comes a point in every athlete's life. Hell, there comes a point in everybody's life. You got to look in the mirror and make sure you're doing the best job you can. And with LeBron, they even said this on TNT. You got to do a little bit less, man. Less can be more. Addition by subtraction. You can't pound the ball for 14 seconds. Swing it, swing it. Get in the post. Throw a post pass to Kevin Love. Let him get in there and get his hands dirty. Since Minnesota, you turned him into a three-point shooter. Man, if they don't get that done, it's going to be a long series. It's going to be a long series. And I think Cleveland Cavaliers coach Tyronn Lue is feeling the same sentiments. I think he came out today and said, LeBron, you got to set the tone. You got to be more aggressive. And I agree. Dribbling the ball at the top of the key is not being aggressive. No, running up and down, getting in the post, getting close to the rim, attacking, being a part of the offense, not the offense by yourself. Hell, you could take some lessons from what D-Wade did the other night against the Philadelphia 76ers. Philly is already up 1-0 in the series. And Monday night, D-Wade said, listen, we're not going out like that. And he put together a terrific game. A fabulous game by Dwayne Wade. One we didn't know he still had in him. But let me talk about D-Wade for a second. D-Wade kind of gets some of the backlash of the Miami era Heat. He gets the backlash of some of that 9-5, 9-6, 9-7. Kind of the glamorous new wave of athletes. He has some of that stench on him. But D-Wade is one of the most rough and rugged basketball players there were. He's one of the hard hat lunch pail kind of players. And you can't underestimate how smart he is. He won a championship prior to LeBron getting to Miami. In fact, in my 33 years of living, take away Michael Jordan, the two most impressive championship runs I've ever seen in the NBA is one by Dirk Nowitzki and the Dallas Mavericks when they toppled LeBron James, D-Wade, and Chris Bosh. We thought Dirk was a soft European. But he ended up beating one of the most talented teams in NBA history. I was floored when that happened. Like, damn. I ain't know you had that in there, Dirk. And the second, in my lifetime, one of the most impressive championships is what D-Wade and Shaquille O'Neal did in Miami. Mostly D-Wade. They were down 2-0 to the Dallas Mavericks. And D-Wade said, nah, man. Put that team on his back and brought them to the championship. I think he ended up shooting more free throws that series than Michael Jordan had ever did. It was just truly phenomenal. So D-Wade is not one of these prissy players. He's rough and rugged. Whatever it takes, I'm going to get it done. And that's what we saw on Monday night in Philadelphia. Coming off the bench for 28 points. And it wasn't just the points. Because things slowed down in the fourth quarter. They put Ben Simmons on him. But D-Wade said, yo, there's too many things you can do on the court. I'm going to contribute regardless. And you saw when Philadelphia made their run, D-Wade came up with that big steal towards the end. When he completely left his man, gambled, swiped the ball away from Ilyasova, got out in the fast break, made a dunk. And then right after that, he proceeded to throw dimes to James Johnson, to Goran Dragic, to help close that game out. That's just being a force. That's identifying that there's endless things you could do on the court. And being smart. Being smart. I think those are lessons LeBron James could take from D-Wade's performance last night. D-Wade has never been as talented as Kobe and LeBron. But what he lacks in skills, he always made up with his brain. Even going back to Marquette when they made that fabulous run in the NCAA. D-Wade's one of the last of the rough and rugged old school players. I don't know if we got too many more of them. These guys who refuse to play a smart brand of basketball. I'm going to be interested to see how they age. D-Wade, with all the miles he has on him, for him to be able to do that last night is a testament to how intelligent of a basketball player he is. Just deflections, playing passing lanes, gambling, using his angles, coming off a screen, rise up, jump shot, coming off the screen the next time, pump fake, layup. That's the dude that was playing chess last night. Playing chess. Great way to even up that series, though, for the Miami Heat. Ben Simmons was spectacular. He was spectacular that night. I got to give it to him. I guess I can't bring up Ben Simmons without mentioning this Rookie of the Year race, huh? So Ben Simmons did an interview with ESPN, and they asked him, hey, Ben, who's the Rookie of the Year? And he said, of course, me. Now, I have no problem with that. You're supposed to be confident. That's what you do. But then the interviewer asked him, hey, what other rookies are on your radar? Who else you think is having a great year? And Ben said, nobody. Really, Ben? Really? That must be a new age thing, man. You can't give credit to your competition. But that made me pay attention. Like, look, let me take a look at this rookie race and see who is really in the lead. And not only do I disagree with Ben Simmons saying that no other rookie is playing well, but I disagree with the fact that he believes he is the Rookie of the Year. If I had to cast a vote, I'm going with the young man in Utah, Donovan Mitchell. What y'all want to talk? Numbers? Donovan Mitchell, 20 points a game. Ben Simmons, 16. But it's not just a race about numbers to me. It's about impact. It's about what you've done with the guys around you. Ben Simmons playing with an all-star. Who Donovan Mitchell playing with? Who? I'll wait for it. Joe Ingles? What's the guy's name? Ingles? Donovan Mitchell's playing with Jay Crowder right now. I looked at the game the other day and said, damn, Jay Crowder's really out there contributing, playing big minutes. LeBron James couldn't do anything with Jay Crowder earlier this season when he was on the Cavs. So Donovan Mitchell doesn't have the luxury of playing with an all-star the way Ben Simmons does and Joel Embiid. Yet Donovan Mitchell still got his team third, fourth seed in the Western Conference. In the Western Conference. You know Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Paul George, Russell Westbrook, James Harden, Chris Paul. Those guys in the Western Conference. A conference that Donovan Mitchell is in where he has to play these guys four times a year each. Ben Simmons only has to play them twice. Ben Simmons get to play a whole bunch of DeMar DeRozans and what other two guards they got? Who else does he even play against in the East? I can't even think of anybody right now. Donovan Mitchell has to play against Dame Lillard, CJ, all these stars. He has to carry that load in a tougher conference. So I'm giving a nod to him. Numbers, impact, responsibility, all goes to Donovan Mitchell. And the other day, Donovan Mitchell wore a sweatshirt that had the definition of a rookie. It said, anybody playing in their first professional season. Now, we all know that was a shot at Ben Simmons because Ben Simmons was drafted 2 years ago. He sat out last year. But even while he sat out, he was still in a professional building, right? He had professional trainers. He had professional weight rooms. He had professional game spreads. Yo, I've worked in professional locker rooms. The professional meals after the game, phenomenal. Protein, starches, whatever you need. The freaking food pyramid is sitting right there on the table. Everything you need, steak, lobster, shrimp, all the fixings. But Donovan Mitchell, you didn't even have to stoop to that level. You didn't even have to poke a shot at him. Because, yes, Ben Simmons was in a professional organization last year, but I'm not going to hold that against Ben Simmons. What I'm going to do is use that to put a feather in your cap, Donovan Mitchell. While Ben Simmons was eating steak and lobster, you was in the Louisville dorm eating Frosted Flakes and cup of noodle soup. So even with you under those stipulations and circumstances, you were still able to climb in the league and make a difference this year. I'm going to use that to give you the nod. You were in Louisville battling the freaking stripper scandal or whatever went on in Louisville. So that's just kudos to you. That's more points on your resume. And lastly, I saw this stat the other day during the broadcast of the Oklahoma City versus Utah Jazz game. I saw that Donovan Mitchell was third in games started this year by a rookie. I said, hold up. He was third? Of course, that was led by Ben Simmons and Jason Tatum. And you know what that meant to me? That highlighted that, yo, Donovan Mitchell wasn't given the keys to the franchise from day one the way Ben Simmons was. They didn't just roll out the ball and say, here, Donovan, it's your show. So Donovan had to first prove to his coaches, his general manager, his teammates, hey, guys, I'm worthy of big-time minutes. He had to fight that battle first. And then once he earned that, then he was able to tackle the league. Then he was able to roll over his competition. So he was fighting two battles internally, then he had to wage one externally. Meanwhile, Ben Simmons had the keys to the house from day one. More points for Donovan Mitchell. So that's my rookie of the year right there, man. That's my case for Donovan Mitchell. Shout out to Ben Simmons, though. He's phenomenal. And he may even have the better professional career, but that's not what it's about. It's about right now, what did you do this year? You're listening to WBH Radio. My name is William Holly. Recording here at Brooklyn College. Man, special shout out to I-95 Sports and Entertainment Network. Happy to be with you guys. Really excited to be with you guys, and hopefully we can have some fun. What else we got on the agenda? What else we got on the agenda? Let me ask you, who is the best player in the Boston Celtics versus Milwaukee Bucks series? Who you got? When I look at the rosters, the name I come up with is Giannis Antetokounmpo, right? That's what they tell me is the best. Yet he wasn't able to pull out a victory in Boston during the first game. In the NBA, when you're the best player, when your supporting cast and Chris Middleton gives you 31 points, when your former rookie of the year comes off the bench and Malcolm Brogdon for 16 points, when your opposition in the Boston Celtics is missing their best player, Kyrie Irving, you got to come away with that victory. Now, to Giannis's credit, he had 35 points. And this may not be the game to criticize him because he's coming off of 35 points. But overall, like, why are the Milwaukee Bucks even a seventh seed if they have this star, this freak of nature, Giannis Antetokounmpo? I don't know. Something seems to just be missing. And I reached out to one of my good friends, D.A. I said, yo, what is it with this team and this guy? And he said, well, you never see the key block or the key rebound or the key basket. So, yeah, he had 35 points. But down the stretch, what did we see? Missed free throws. Filing out. And then the NBA was set stars apart from the rest. The stars can do it on demand. They could stop the bleeding. And I love Giannis, but he doesn't seem to have that dimension in his game. Somebody who I think is in the same vein, who I was very critical of, is Kevin Garnett. Former Boston Celtics, former New Jersey, Brooklyn Net, Minnesota Timberwolves. Kevin Garnett would have 25 points at the end of the game, but I thought he was able to get to that number just by accumulating insignificant baskets over the course of a game. He'd give you six in the first, give you six in the second, six. But I don't remember the big play from Kevin Garnett. And that's the same feeling I'm getting with Giannis Antetokounmpo. Again, I'm recording this on Tuesday, April 17th at 7 o'clock, so I won't be able to include tonight's results into this podcast. But Giannis, in this crazy Eastern Conference where it was kind of a down year, you should not be in the seventh seed. You should not lose to a Celtics team that is without Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward. But shout out to the Celtics. Shout out to the Celtics, Danny Ainge and crew. They have a bunch of young, hungry guys that's looking to play. Terry Rozier was phenomenal. We saw the step back three that he had. Jaylen Brown, another young talent, hungry to make his name in this NBA. That team's going to be interesting. I was joking with my friends. My boy, he said, man, when Gordon Hayward comes back, do they even have a spot for him? It's going to be interesting. Going to be interesting. A series that will not be getting much of my attention is the Washington Wizards versus Toronto Raptors. Now, first with the Toronto Raptors, I've never seen a number one seed in a conference have no shot at winning the championship. And that's exactly what I believe is the case with the Toronto Raptors. Does anybody believe they have a shot? I don't. What about you? Kyle Lowry has never showed up in the playoffs. Ever. And DeMar DeRozan, he had a better year this year shooting the rock, but prior to that, he was a two-guard who can't shoot. But, man, the Washington Wizards. The Washington Wizards are a disappointment, and mainly because of John Wall. Mainly because of John Wall. I drive limos during the weekend, so I was listening to this game on the radio. I was watching on my phone back and forward. And it seems to be the story every game. Down the stretch, John Wall with the key turnover. John Wall with the key turnover. Now, John Wall missed an extended stretch of games this year. And when he was gone, his team looked amazing. They had an uptick in their winning percentage. That's a damn shame, John Wall. That is the biggest indictment against you, bigger than anything I could say on this mic. In your absence, your team got better. And it wasn't a game or two here. You were out for a month. And your team performed well. Markieff Morris, the Morris twin, came about. Bradley Beal showed dimensions of the game we hadn't seen. Marcin Gortat even came out on social media saying, yo, man, this is a real team win. Emphasize on team. I had the luxury of playing college basketball. I played at York College in Queens, New York. And during my junior year, I had my appendix removed. I missed about 7 games. In those 7 games, my team went 0-7. Now, I cheered hard for my team. I wanted them to win every game. But let's call a spade a spade. If you believe you are a talented player, if you are a contributor to that team, there's no reason they should get better in your absence. So me sitting on the sideline and watching them struggle confirmed, okay, dang, maybe I really am one of the key contributors. John Wall, while you were out, they got better. And another plus to sitting out is you get to learn different things about your teammates, about the game of basketball. When I sat out and I saw some of my teammates take on different roles, I said, wow, I didn't know this guy had this in his repertoire. Oh, I didn't know this guy could do these things. So when I come back, it's my duty to help incorporate those newly found talents into what we do. John Wall, while you were absent, we saw the playmaking ability of Bradley Beal. We saw that Otto Porter is more than just a deep threat. We saw the Morris boy get in the post and make plays. So while you sat on the bench, I'm thinking you're going to see this and say, man, let me incorporate this into what we do and make us a better team. But no, you came back and did the same damn thing. Just dribble, 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 dribble until the play clock is up. Turnover. Bad shot. That's what's most disappointing, man. And I feel for guys like Bradley Beal, who played great in your absence, who we know is a stud, the skills and talents are there. John Wall, while you sat out, you didn't learn anything. You come back and it's the same team. That's the most frustrating thing. As a basketball fan, I just want to see good basketball. That's got to be frustrating for those guys in that locker room. I know it is for me as a fan. You didn't look at your team and say, dang, these guys are playing well. How can I incorporate that into what we do when I come back? So that Washington-Toronto series is not getting much of my time, man. But that's probably the last time I'm going to mention it. Last time I'm going to mention it, man. You're listening to WBH Radio. My name is Will Holly. Glad to be here on I-95 Sports and Entertainment, man. I recorded this podcast just for this network. Nobody else is getting this one. Real quick, before we get into some NBA games, Joel Embiid came out the other day on Instagram, and he said, I'm effing tired of being baby. Joel Embiid suffered an orbital fracture during the last week of the regular season. It's caused him to miss the first 2 games of the postseason. Man, this must be a new thing with the social media, man. We in the middle of the playoffs, and you say you're tired of getting babied. yo, Joel Embiid, you couldn't go to your general manager, head coach, and have that conversation? You couldn't go to your trainers and your doctors, have that conversation? Why are you putting that out here to us, the public, during the playoffs nonetheless? It's about no distractions, putting your head down and keeping the stories quiet around your team. It's already magnified. Everybody's in tune with the playoffs. Why would you want to bring that about? I'll never get that social media stuff talking to the public when the people who have the answers, who the people who control your destinies are sitting right down the bench from you, are in the same building as you. And Joel Embiid, can you blame them for being cautious with you? Are you not somebody that has missed season after season due to injury? Can you blame them for being cautious with you? Come on, bro. Give me a break, man. Give me a freaking break. New Orleans Pelicans and the Portland Trailblazers are set to do battle again Tuesday night. They played a tough game. First game, Anthony Davis is just showing out. Showing out. Rondo is making a resurgence in his NBA career as well. After he was kind of left for dead after his time with the Celtics, after winning his championship. He went out there and threw 17 dimes. That's going to be a tough battle for the Portland Trail Blazers. Because, again, in that series, I think Anthony Davis is the best player. And in the NBA, the best player usually comes out. 9 times out of 10. If you give him a decent supporting cast, they're going to come out. And with Rajon Rondo and Jrue Holiday, I think that's a good team, man. That's a good matchup for them. They might knock the Blazers out. We forget last year that Rondo had the Bulls up 2-0 on the Boston Celtics before his injury. Right? There would have been no Isaiah Thomas in the Eastern Conference Finals if Rondo would have stayed healthy. So keep that in mind. With those Portland Trailblazers, the two studs, Dame Lillard and CJ McCollum, they are required to carry too much of a load, man. Even Isaiah Thomas and Joe Dumars of the Bad Boy Pistons had Dennis Rodman, John Sally built. They had some help. They had some help, man. Two smaller guards, I don't see them doing too much. And two offensive-minded guards. See, when you have two small guards, somebody got to be the pit bull of the crew. Somebody got to be the pit bull. If you got Magic Johnson, you need a Byron Scott next to him. Somebody that's willing to dig in defensively, doesn't mind if they get a shot. If you got Steph Curry, you need a Klay Thompson next to him. I mentioned earlier, yeah, Klay can shoot the rock, but if he don't get the ball, he's digging in defensively. Allen Iverson with the Sixers. He had Aaron McKee and Eric Snow next to him. They didn't care if the ball came their way. They know they had a job to do. It's just not enough in Portland. Not enough going on there with the Portland team. How about that Houston Rockets versus Timberwolves game the other day? Now, I opened the show talking about how I think that the playoffs are a different animal. You got to be versatile. What you do in the regular season is not going to get it done in the playoffs. And when I say stuff like that, I'm talking about the Rockets. All of their scoring antics, I don't think it's going to translate well in the playoffs. But hey, after game one, I can't say that. They looked phenomenal. James Harden looked unguardable. James Harden looked unguardable. 30-footers going to the lane. You know the Euro step. And I expected more from the Rockets, especially with Jimmy Butler. When Jimmy Butler was healthy this year, the Timberwolves were around the third or fourth seed in the West. You know, that's a formidable team. In fact, when you match the rosters up, the Timberwolves come out on top to me. Jimmy Butler, James Harden, that's a wash. Karl Anthony Towns over Capella, I'm taking Karl Anthony Towns. Who else we got there? Like Taj Gibson, I'm taking him over the other guys. D. Rose coming off the bench. D. Rose with a great game coming off the bench, 16 points. James Harden just put that team on his back. Now, the TNT guys were screaming, yo, every time the Rockets switch, you got to dump the ball in to Karl Anthony Towns. And I saw that mismatch as well. But I'm just amazed that a professional coach in Tom Thibodeau, a professional player in Karl Anthony Towns, a professional point guard in Jeff Teague, I can't believe that they missed those opportunities for the whole game. I want to believe that there's something deeper behind it. There's another reason. Because truly, Karl Anthony Towns had little babies on him the whole time. Chris Paul to switch, James Harden to switch. You got to put their little ass under the basket. But they wouldn't feed him. They wouldn't feed him. I just refuse to. An NBA team with freaking eight coaches and tailored suits and all these. I refuse that they miss that time in and time again. But we'll see, man. I look forward to that adjustment being made. I look forward to seeing that series again. NBA playoffs are in full effect, y'all. I think we are in for a treat. This is only the first round. I think it's only going to get better as the competition gets stiffer. I want to put a bow on the regular season, though. Russell Westbrook averaged a triple-double for the second season in a row. He was able to capture that triple-double by grabbing 20 rebounds in his last game. Now, what do you guys think of that? Some of my friends, they hate it, man, chasing stats. But I got no problem with it. The only issue I have with Russell Westbrook is after the game when he acts like he doesn't care. He's like, huh, me chasing stats? What do you mean? No, that's in the course of regular gameplay. Really, bro? Who the hell you think you kidding? You had your power forwards getting out of the way so you could snatch the rebound. There's nothing wrong with coming to the media and saying, look, I had the opportunity to do something special, average a triple-double for the second year in a row, something that has never been done, being in an elite class by myself, and you know what, guys? I went for it. I went for it. There's nothing wrong with coming out and saying that. And he did it. He insulted my intelligence with that one. That's it. End of the season for the NBA also means coaches get fired. Are there any of these coaches you guys care about? Frank Vogel got dismissed from the Magic. Clifford got dismissed from the Hornets. Jeff Hornacek, the New York Knicks got rid of Jeff Hornacek. Now, who would you guys like to see in that position? I heard Jerry Stackhouse interviewed. I hear Mark Jackson is in the running. Former St. John's great Mark Jackson, former New York Knicks, former Rookie of the Year. This is what I say about Mark Jackson. Mark Jackson had, when he had the Golden State Warriors, we gave him a lot of credit as having a nice, fiery young bunch and Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. Who are these hungry young guys? Little did we know he had the freaking best lineup in the NBA. He had the best lineup in the NBA. So now that I see what the Golden State Warriors have turned into, I take that as a knock against Mark Jackson. Hold on, Mark Jackson. When we thought you were overachieving by climbing your way into the playoffs and playing tough rounds but going home, when we thought you guys were the little engine that could, no. What it seems like now is that you were actually stifling that star-studded bunch. With you, Mark Jackson, they were kind of like driving with their foot on the brake. So I'm no longer giving you credit for having an overachieving bunch. No. It seems you were the reason they were underachieving. You stifled them. You neutered them. Case in point. I heard this like last year or a couple years ago after he got fired and after the Golden State Warriors turned into the champions we know them to be. Golden State Warriors' best lineup is Steph, Klay, and Draymond. Draymond at the four. And it came out that that lineup with Draymond in it, during Mark Jackson's tenure, he played that lineup like 5 minutes for the whole season. 5 minutes for the whole season. So the best lineup in the NBA over the last 3 years, Mark Jackson wasn't able to recognize that when he had it. So it's not like he was coaching them up. As he described it, he's the caterpillar to that butterfly. No, you didn't recognize what the best lineup was. The minute Steve Kerr got hired, one of the first conversations he had was, yo, Andre Iguodala, you got to go to the bench. I know you're a former All-Star, but I got you. I need you to go to the bench because we see something with this lineup with Draymond. That Steve Kerr did that before they even tipped the ball off for the regular season. So I'm sorry, I'm not thrilled by a Mark Jackson hire. Another name that came up is David Blatt. David Blatt used to coach the Cleveland Cavaliers. He took LeBron and them to the finals. And a lot of people find this comical. Stephen A. said, no way, no how, they better not bring that guy in here in New York City. What do I say? I got no problem with it. There was a book that came out recently. It was by a gentleman by the name of Ian Thompson. It's called The Soul of Basketball. And it's about the LeBron James, D-Wade, Chris Bosh, Miami years. And in the book, they talked to Pat Riley. And Pat Riley said that during that first season, LeBron James came to him and said, hey, do you ever get the itch to coach? Do you ever get the itch to coach again? And Pat Riley said he interpreted that as LeBron asking him to come back and coach. Now, what do we think of Eric Spoelstra? What does the NBA community think of Eric Spoelstra? Two-time champion, leader guy, revered. If LeBron James had his way in Miami, Eric Spoelstra would have been gone. He would have never had the opportunity to prove that he is a championship coach, to prove that he is a leader. If LeBron had his way, he would have been gone. Luckily, Miami had good leadership in Pat Riley, and Pat Riley said, no. Eric Spoelstra is your coach. So, how do we know David Blatt is not Eric Spoelstra, but he just caught the raw deal, and the Cavs panicked and fired him? How do we not know that? Shoot, if LeBron had his way, Spoelstra would have been gone, right? I mean, Spoelstra lost that first year. David Blatt lost the first year. How do we know David Blatt is not all of the championship stuff that Spoelstra is? David Blatt been winning championships all over Europe. So I'm not mad if he gets the opportunity to interview for the New York Knicks job. He's not a laughing stock. LeBron James, he wanted Pat Riley. He wanted Spoelstra out of there. Okay. LeBron James gets to Cleveland. Oh, he wants Tyronn Lue during David Blatt's tenure. He wanted Tyronn Lue. So they got David Blatt out of there. Now Tyronn Lue is in place, and there's grumblings that LeBron wants somebody else. It shows how fickle that business is. It shows how one decision could change the trajectory of so many lives. Imagine if Pat Riley would have pulled that string on Spoelstra. We would have never known. So I'm all good with David Blatt getting the job. I'm all good with him getting the interview, man. Oh, man, I'm having fun with you guys. I-95 Sports and Entertainment. Please hit me on Twitter at WBH Radio. A few more things before we close out. Oklahoma City Thunder play-by-play announcer Brian Davis. He was in some hot water last week. During one of the broadcasts, he said during a call, Russell Westbrook is out of his cotton picking mind. Now, the backlash came. Let me tell you something. My grandparents are from North Carolina and South Carolina. I heard that phrase my whole life. Yo, Will, are you out of your cotton picking mind? Will, get your cotton picking ass in this house. Yo, it wasn't until last week that I understood what the hell they were actually saying. Oh, cotton picking. Oh, that, sure, probably that has slave roots. Oh, I get it. I get it. So they suspended him. Now, if you think Brian Davis was a full-blown racist, would one game suffice? Hell no, right? We have to get his ass out of here for good, right? So you suspended him one game. So, okay, you don't believe he's a racist. Because if he did, I don't believe it. If he did, we would have to get him out of there for good. So why suspend him for one game? If he made a mistake, let's get creative. I mean, his public apology, all right. Shoot, make him write an op-ed piece about the beginnings of cotton picking, the term, where it came from, something. But if me and my people, the black community, are the offended party, don't just appease us, oh, he got one game. I mean, like, let's get better with the people make mistakes, man. That's what I'm really trying to say. People make mistakes. So by suspending him one game, you know that it was just a mistake. Let's get a little bit more creative. I was proud of Russell Westbrook. He came out and said, yo, I know this guy, man. I'm sure he made a mistake. He got to pay the price. But stop just throwing around this one game joint, man. Let's do something that'll actually make a difference for the offended parties. Let's get to the history, and maybe we can educate some more people on really what cotton picking is about. Let's do some community service hours. Get out to the aggrieved parties and hear their stance and why the term is offensive. But just, oh, he got one game suspension. He's good. Nah, man. That serves nobody. Serves nobody. Let's put a wrap on the NBA. I'm going to be airing every Wednesday, I believe. Every Wednesday. Let's figure out a time that works for everybody. 6 p.m., 4 p.m. Let's figure something out. Please hit me up. A couple more things. So Colin Kaepernick had the opportunity to work out with the Seattle Seahawks last week. And they asked him to agree to not kneel again. Now, he wouldn't say yes or no whether he would kneel. So the Seahawks pushed the workout back and ended up signing another quarterback. Now, I was confused by this news because I thought it came out that Colin Kaepernick would no longer kneel. No longer kneel. So I'm like, yo, let me do my research, make sure I didn't get this confused. And sure enough, I found an article, March 3rd, 2017. The great Adam Schefter, ESPN, said Colin Kaepernick's camp said he's no longer going to kneel for the national anthem. So why this hiccup? I really was confused, so I shot the text to one of my boys. Why do you think this is? And the only theory that he could come up with was maybe Colin Kaepernick questions whether this is a legit offer. Because remember, Colin Kaepernick is in the middle of a legal struggle. He is suing the NFL for possible collusion and of keeping him out of the NFL. Right? He thinks the 32 owners conspired to keep him out last year. So that court case is going on right now. So if they sign him and put him on the team, that would soften his case, right? The NFL could say, look, guys, we gave him a job, and they cut him the next day, and the court case is over. That's the only theory that makes sense to me. Colin Kaepernick was a little wary. He said, nah, I'm not going to say yes or no whether I'm going to kneel. So we'll keep our eye on that situation. And before I get out of here, lastly, Dallas Cowboys cut their wide receiver, Dez Bryant. Now, I initially just glanced over this. I mean, this is what the NFL does. They cut players, star players. They give them a five-year contract, and they cut them after 1 year, and nothing happens. I mean, that's the NFL business, right? But it wasn't until I saw Dez Bryant's interview with the NFL Network that I said, let me take a closer look. In that interview, Dez Bryant hinted at him being cut because of a personal matter, personal issues with coaches specifically. And that brought me back to a book I read recently. It's by a gentleman by the name of William Roden. And it's called $40 Million Slave. And in the book, he talks about the black athlete is no better off than when he was in slavery on the plantation. Whoa, hold up, man. Will, what are you talking about? How can they be enslaved? They make millions of dollars. But the dynamic is no different. It's still black labor and predominantly white ownership and management. The power structure remains the same. The black athlete, white owner. So Dez Bryant, he could be a fiery guy, confrontational, get in your face. But see, guys like Dez Bryant, I appreciate a great deal. You know why? You never have to guess what they're thinking. Never have to guess. He wears his heart on the sleeve. If he has an issue, he's going to confront you head on, and boom, we could put that to rest. And in an interview, Dez said he went to a few coaches and tried to iron some stuff out. But they ran to the owner and tried to get him out of there. Try to get him booted. And their word won out over Dez's word. And today I find myself feeling sorry for Dez. He has to leave the only professional organization he has ever known without without a paycheck, without a job. And he believes he was ousted by coaches who, I tell you, they're not as good as their job as Dez Bryant is. And I want to ask, how come it is always up to the athlete to have to acquiesce to the coach? Why can't the athlete walk into the owner's office and say, you know what? I don't like this coach. Get him out of here. And that goes back to the book. Black labor, white ownership. We are all from different walks of life. We communicate different. We think different. And in those professional locker rooms, you have to understand at least everybody and learn how to respect everybody and make it work. Because Dez Bryant doesn't communicate the same way guys from your neighborhood does, that shouldn't be enough to get him ousted. And you know the effed up part about it is that he is getting booted 10 days from the draft. All the free agency money is wrapped up already. What also leads me to believe it's of a personal nature. And Ndamukong Suh, he got cut last month. He was able to go out and still get paid. Richard Sherman got cut last month. He was able to go out and get paid. Now, I'm just stating my opinion. I'm not finger pointing. And in fact, if I'm pointing the finger at somebody, I'm talking to the players. When you guys sit down to these negotiating tables, these labor agreements, you got to keep this in mind. You got to fight harder for a guaranteed contract. You got to fight harder to be a part of the ownership structure or bring more coaches in the ranks. Because they'll just throw your ass to the wind like they did Dez, like they did Richard, like they did Ndamukong Suh. I don't want to hear any more belly aching You got to bring it to the negotiating table. Or else you're going to always be on the short end of the stick. You're going to always be the labor. You're going to always be the victim. You're going to always be at the mercy of somebody else. Yo, that's my episode. Again, special shout out to I-95 Sports and Entertainment. Thanks for having me. I appreciate you guys. My name is William Holly. Hit me on Twitter at WBH Radio. I'm out.